Okay, thanks so much for asking me be part of this. It's been very interesting so far. So I would like to have a look at how, if at all, conscience claims can be... conscience claims, on the one hand, can be distinguished from other conscience-like judgments, such as clinical judgments and judgments about potential value or the best interests of the patient, and judgments about what we ought to do in respect of prudential and clinical judgments, on the other hand. And this is very preliminary, so and it would also be quite repetitive, so apologies. And then I want to very briefly have a look at some of the implications if we can't sufficiently distinguish these conscience claims from these other kinds of judgments. So I'm going to start by saying a little bit about what I take to be standard conscience claims, so that we can then think about the extent to which these can be distinguished from other judgments. So this will be repetitive, sorry. claims that conscience is a mode of consciousness and thought about one's own acts and their value or disvalue. So when a person appeals to his conscience or describes his acts as conscientious, he makes a hypothetical and prospective claim. So he claims that if he were to commit the act in question, he would violate his conscience. And this violation would result in not only in such unpleasant feelings as guilt and or shame, but also in a fundamental loss of integrity or wholeness or harmony in the self. You make a prediction about what would happen if you were to commit such an act. And this is a prediction based on the imaginative projection of concrete courses of action in light of one's fundamental standards. So claims of conscience are thought of as self-referential in a particular way. They're predicated on a claim about the object's own conscience. And it's personal and subjective, so it's a person's consciousness of and reflection on his own acts in relation to his standards of judgment. It's a first-person claim deriving from standard that you may or may not also apply to the conduct of others. And some people argue that conscience claims might be something more than that. So Mark Wycliffe, for example, argues that in making conscious claim, one isn't just stating that it would be unethical to do something, but rather the physician in this case is asserting a strong claim that his or her moral integrity is at stake, and appeals to conscience can be understood as efforts to preserve this moral integrity. But it's unclear how much extra work is done by the notion of moral integrity, since the reason that someone's moral integrity might be under threat must be that this thing is immoral. So although a person's appeal to his conscience usually involves an appeal to moral standards, conscience is not in itself the standard. It's the mode of consciousness resulting from the application of standards to one's conduct. For example, the retrospective bad conscience emerging after moral judgments about the act. So even when the claim is prospective, it still comes after the judgment about the rightness or wrongness of the act. So it seems questionable whether moral integrity itself could be the source of someone's conscious claim. So Thomas Nagel has points out that if by committing murder one sacrifices one's moral purity or integrity, that can only be because there's already something wrong with murder. So the general reason against committing murder can't be that, therefore can't merely be that it makes one an immoral person. So it seems that the source of someone's conscious claim then must be the moral wrongness of this act, or at least that the moral wrongness of this act must play a large part in any integrity claims. So that's just what I take to be standard views regarding conscious claims. Obviously, there are lots of variations, and but I want to take these standard views and see how we can use these kinds of accounts of conscious claims to distinguish conscious claims from other kinds of judgments. So, in particular, how we can distinguish them from clinical judgments and judgments regarding prudential value, that is about whether some intervention is in a patient's best interest. So best interest broadly understood, I'm going with Steve's best interest conception, so not limited to patient's lack capacity. So these other judgments seem conscience-like because they seem to share some features with conscience claims. And arguably, it's already very hard to distinguish best interest judgments from clinical judgments, and I'm not really going to go into that. I'm going to talk mainly about best interest judgments. So Steve has a proposal for distinguishing conscience claims from best interest claims. So he claims that a doctor, I will call that person D, her decision to decline to provide an intervention, which I'll call Phi, to patient P is a conscience claim if first condition, D's decision is based on moral values. Second condition, D claims ownership of the conduct-related choice not to provide Phi. And third condition, D's decision is inward-facing, that is, concerns D's own conduct. So I'll stipulate the second condition, that D claims ownership of the decision, and focus on conditions 1 and 3. I think that 1 and 3, it seems that they could be met by many of these best interest judgments too. So in respect of the first condition, it's true that judgments about whether it is in P's best interest to receive Phi focus on P, but all decisions about how D ought to act in respect of P and what is good for P must be decisions based on moral values, moral decisions. And Steve acknowledges this when he points out that judgments about whether the respective effectiveness and risk profiles of options A and B can be made on the basis of technical medical skill, but decisions about how you ought to act on the information regarding effectiveness and risk profiles cannot. So that's a normative judgment. This latter judgment concerns prudential value, but how D should act in respect of P in light of the information about P's prudential value must be based on moral values. So it seems to meet condition 1. So, and this seems to be the case even if, or whether or not P's best interests are outweighed by other considerations. And in respect of the third condition, that Dee's decision is inward facing, so it concerns her own conduct, it seems that decisions based on best interest judgments could meet this condition too. So all decisions about whether D should provide Phi to P are necessarily decisions about how D should act about D's conduct. So this is the case even, or whether these reasons for providing or not providing Phi focus on D herself, for example, avoiding complicity in an inherently immoral act, or avoiding a risk or burden to yourself, or whether these reasons for providing or not providing Phi focus on P. For example, that D doesn't agree that Phi will be in P's best interest, or D fears that P will later regret undergoing Phi, and reasons like that. And again, this seems to be the case whether or not other reasons outweigh the reasons stemming from P's best interest. So these are still reasons for D to act in a certain manner in respect of P. So it seems hard to distinguish conscious claims from best interest judgments or decisions about how D ought to act in respect of P's best interest on Steve's account. The distinction seems most promising in cases in which these moral convictions clearly diverge from P's best interest, and especially in cases in which D refuses to engage in a weighing exercise involving her conscience claim and other considerations like Bobby talked about earlier today. Miss B might be, there might be some examples of this kind of reasoning in the Miss B case, where the physician stated that their reasons for not withdrawing artificial ventilation in accordance with P's wishes were things like that they didn't want to see her die, and they were trained to save life, things like that. But it seems that we might want to allow for conscience claims according to which whether Phi's in P's best interest should not determine whether D should provide Phi to P, because these moral beliefs about P, about Phi, other than her moral beliefs about whether Phi is good for P, matter to her decision too. So in making a conscience claim, D might recognize that receiving Phi would be in P's best interest and yet decline to provide it. So D sees Phi, she accepts that Phi is in P's best interest and sees that as a potential reason for her to provide Phi, but this is outweighed by other reasons not to provide Phi. So we might think that conscious claims, if we are committed to conscious claims, might play a role in these kinds of cases too. And we might not want to go as far as to say that this decision must be to act contrary to P's best interests, or to refuse to engage with P's best interests or something like that. And it might seem that we would lose some of what we value, if we value something, in conscience claims if we restrict it to cases in which these views diverge from P's best interests, or where D refused to engage in a weighing exercise relating to her conscience claim and other considerations. And it would seem to exclude at least cases in which D refused because of genuine moral uncertainty whether her actions towards P providing Phi would be morally wrong or not. And it was also exclude cases in which D was unable to articulate her conscious claim in a way that didn't involve P piece. So it wouldn't just be the case that she would have to be able to articulate it. It would also be have to be the case that she was able to articulate it in a way that didn't involve P. And it would seem to exclude many of the bridge too far cases and many of the cases which Paul talked about earlier today. So whether or not we think that this would be acceptable would depend on what it is that we value in respect of conscious claims. And I'm not the best person to answer that, but I think the onus should be on those who defend this kind of conception of conscious to justify why it would be sufficiently valuable to warrant this kind of respect. On the other hand, I think there are dangers of not distinguishing or being able to distinguish conscious claims from judgments about prudential value and how we ought to act in respect of judgments about prudential value. And there seems to be clear benefits to distinguishing these kinds of cases. So Steve mentioned some such benefits, transparency and truthfulness, allowing parties to be truthful about their reasons for acting in the way they do, aiding decision-making, allowing us to better evaluate what's happening in particular cases, and so on. Enforcing reasoning into best interests analyses risks concealing what are really decisions stemming from these own values, which might potentially be conscious as clinical or best interest judgments. So Nils Lina has done some work on physicians' decisions to provide or not provide abortion in Sweden, where he shows that physicians' values played a large part in their role about providing or not providing abortions, but they were concealed as best interest judgments. So those are dangers, I think, of not being able to make a distinction between conscious claims and best interests and clinical judgments. And in terms of the implications of if conscious claims can't be sufficiently distinguished from best interest judgments, it seems that this would have some important implications, both for those who defend conscious claims and those who oppose them. So it seems that if this were the case, then conscious proponents must either accept that conscious claims tend to be of the contrary to the best interests of the patient affected kind, or the kind where D refuses to engage in a weighing exercise, or accept that conscious claims are such that they can't appropriately be distinguished from best interest judgments, so expand the role for conscience, or come up with some other way to distinguish conscious claims and best interest judgments. But equally, those who oppose conscientious objection would need to either come up with a better way to distinguish conscious claims from best interest judgments, or to go further than Savulescu and others have done and argue that there should be less room for conscious-like judgments to figure in best interest judgments, or more onerous obligations on healthcare professionals to give reasons for their decisions or something like that.